episodes 1 and 2 are over. We are just getting started here on the Black Mirror recap on Post Show Recap. So, hello, everyone. Mike Bloom here, talking about the first couple of episodes of Black Mirror Season 3. At the date I'm recording this, October 21st, all of the episodes have been released for Black Mirror's third season, and we are going through it episode by episode here. But, of course, I am not alone. I am joined by a man who I would gladly give 5 stars to on any occasion. AJ, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm glad you didn't downvote me and say that I needed to be at least a 4.2 in order to podcast with you. Thank you very much for your leniency.
People need to be at least like a 1.2 to podcast with me. I have a very low bar.
Yeah, I have a feeling that after our comments on these episodes, perhaps people out there will be downvoting us left and right, but hopefully they will not be. Hopefully they'll just be giving us nothing but 5-star ratings, and our averages can increase to the point where we can afford that deluxe apartment on the east side.
Sky. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And hopefully nobody sends a giant spider after us that contains the faces of our childhood bullies.
Oh, we'll get to that one in time.
Yeah, so we're recapping the first 2 episodes here, Nosedive and Playtest. 2 very different episodes. I feel like it greatly represents the gamut that Black Mirror can truly run in terms of the styles that it goes with and the messages that they're trying to create. But before we do that, again, we're recording this on the day that the episodes got released, October 21st. And in true Black Mirror fashion, there were recent things in the news that resounded with things that Black Mirror has been shouting from the mountaintops to us for the past 5 years. But ironically enough, it's connected directly to the new House of Black Mirror in Netflix. For those of you that don't know, there was a DDoS attack. I think it's from a group of hackers, but I think the source is still unknown. But it brought down several major websites, including Twitter, Reddit, and believe it or not, Netflix, the deluxe apartment of Black Mirror. AJ, when you heard about the news this morning, for it to happen on the day where Black Mirror episodes drop, Are we thinking it's some sort of cross promotion marketing here?
Oh yeah, we don't know. Is it Russia? We don't know. Could it be China? I don't know. Nobody knows. We don't know who it is.
I was going to say your Trump turned into a Waldo, but I think that's the point, right?
Exactly. The lines are being blurred. No, it's just fascinating that we're doing a show about technology. This Black Mirror, what makes it great is it really takes the technology of today and spins it forward just a little bit. And we almost couldn't watch these episodes because of the current technology being hacked. It's the irony runs deep today.
Were enough people just downvoted us beforehand that we were like that guy Chester. We were not allowed in the invisible doors of Netflix, and we got upvoted throughout the day and were able to get let in eventually in the afternoon.
Oh, poor Chester.
poor Chester. We never got a follow-up to Chester. He's not in prison, at least, but he's still, unfortunately, kind of handcuffed by the system. Let's get into it, AJ. I'd love to hear your thoughts overall. For these 2 episodes alone, was this a good start to Black Mirror Season 3? Where did these 2 fall in line with the other 7 episodes we've talked about?
Well, first of all, I would say that the universe, they certainly fit right in. I knew I was watching Black Mirror for both episodes. There was no doubt in my mind. I didn't feel like this was some other show masquerading as Black Mirror. I think this was definitely Black Mirror. I think your mileage will vary with these episodes in general for the course of the series.
Especially depending on what car you have from the rental car place.
Exactly. Speaking of not understanding the language of the car.
Hey, you know what? Those home improvement reruns are even funnier in another language, which is to say still not that funny.
Yeah, no, I guess Tim Allen in another language is funnier than Tim Allen in English, because at least there's a chance he might be funny in this.
I wonder what translates to in Bulgarian or whatever that language was.
Oh, good times. But I would say that I thought Nosedive was a really good episode for I think a lot of people are watching this for the first time, and maybe we'll just jump into Season 3 and then maybe go back and watch 1 and 2. So for first exposure, I think it was a really good episode to kind of ease you into what Black Mirror can offer. Certainly a lot easier to be an entry than the first episode of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I really did I liked it. I don't think it needed to be an hour long. I think that's my problem with it is that I felt it dragged an awful lot and we'll get to it in a little bit. But I think the first episode, Nosedive, just took a long time to get to where it was supposed to be. That would be my only problem with it. But as an introduction to the Black Mirror world, I thought it was really great. And I playtest just blew me away. I thought it was amazing. I don't know what they have in store with the next four episodes that we're going to be watching, but wow. Just to have a playtest, I'm thankful it came back.
Yeah, I'm debating. I know we ranked our own personal proclivities as to the first seven episodes in our very first podcast. I'm debating whether playtest is going to unseat White Bear for me as number one, just because it was a great mix of terrifying and humorous and brain scratching to the point of, I guess, brain shocking with the literal shocker of an ending, and just a Russian nesting doll that was those last 10 minutes. We'll get into it, but I completely agree. That episode stunned me, and not in a Cooper-like way. The first episode I enjoyed as well. I definitely agree with your statement that this would be a great ease in of an episode for people who had never seen Black Mirror before. You know, we talked in our previous podcast about how they were going to be bringing on some more American actors, writers, directors onto Black Mirror. This is definitely the most American episode of Black Mirror we have seen thus far. I don't think there were any British people in it whatsoever. So it definitely, if you're talking, you were talking before about how it didn't feel like it was a different, it was part of a different show or people attempting to do Black Mirror. I definitely got that. I mean, you could definitely get a difference in tone, and we'll talk, I'm sure, about the writing, which is from, even though the story is by Charlie Brooker, as we talked about in our preview, the teleplay is by Michael Schur and Rashida Jones, who are more known for comedy. And Brooker's known for comedy as well, but I think in a different comic sense than those two are. I do feel like the first episode, I agree about the length. I also feel like it was a little on the nose for me, to the point of where, you know, we're bleeding all over the place from all the times the episode has been hitting us on the nose. There are just a lot of things that are being said by people and themes that have just been repeated over and over and over again over the course of an hour, when really this is not, in my opinion, something completely new that we haven't seen before. This is a theme that I feel like has become very prevalent nowadays, especially in a culture where we are constantly upvoting and downvoting each other. I'm sure Charlie Brooker got in an Uber one day and realized, oh, I can rate my driver and my driver can rate me, and decided to create an episode off of it. It's not to say I didn't enjoy it. I thought Bryce Dallas Howard put in a powerhouse performance, but it felt like a story that I had already heard about before that was then done over and over and over again over the course of an hour.
Yeah, it was like an episode of Auntie Tribeca. It's like, it's funny, but none of the jokes are new.
Oh, throwing shade at another one of Rashida Jones' projects, I see.
Yeah, there's a theme. There's a reason. You know, I like I said, I liked the first episode. I didn't love the first episode. It was a little too long. I thought Bryce Dallas Howard was okay. I thought she had a really thankless job here, because she was playing a character who I didn't like enough to root for, but I didn't hate enough to root against. And it made it really hard, because she's basically in every minute of this episode. So to not really care what happens to her really hurt, I think, the episode in terms of a rooting interest. I didn't really care whether she got to 4.8 or crashed all the way down to 0.0. It didn't matter to me.
I mean, I feel like part of that might be because you know she's going to get down to 0.0. I feel like maybe it was because we have watched Black Mirror so much that we know that there are no real happy endings. We talked about in our preview podcast that even the happiest of endings are still not very happy in comparison to everything else that exists in the world. And so even when you look at that guy Chester that we talked about before, I feel like you could tell that Lacey was going to fall either down there or even further down there, and it turns out to be the latter. Yeah, I had a tough time sort of sympathizing with her character as well. I can sort of understand where she's coming from in a society where you are given a literal numerical rank as to your social standing. Of course you want to increase your rank. It's a quantitative measure of how good you are at life, essentially. So I can understand what she was going for. But I mean, when her brother was yelling at her before she left on her odyssey of a trip to get to that island, I I was agreeing with him, you know, that she was pursuing things that were fake and were really not going to matter in the end, and that she was destroying her own relationships in order to make her way to the top. And at the end of the day, would she still look back on it and think that she still had a solid life? So I definitely tussled with the character. Maybe that's why it felt long, was because, you know, the latter, what, like 40 minutes of the episode are all about her trip to that island and all the follies, the National Lampoon's vacation-esque events that occur to prevent her from getting there. And maybe because if you can't get behind the character, it makes it harder to watch as a result.
Yeah, well, you know, you say there's no happy endings in Black Mirror. I would argue that perhaps this is a happy ending. To me, I took this as saying what she was trying to do was the path of down to not being happy. You know, that's why the Cherry Jones character is so important. You know, to say she's
large
a one point.
Marge.
Yes. Well, she's a lowly one, but she's the best character in the whole show, in the world that we meet. She's the best person there. She knows who she is. She's grown up. I think to me this episode was all about, not to get into, you know, Survivor and Gen X versus Millennials type thing, but really this millennial generation and this need to be protected, to have safe spaces, to be in my inner circle and not to let anyone in my inner circle who doesn't agree with me and tell me what I want to hear, to give me those fives. It doesn't matter if that's what I think or not. It's just like, I'll give you a five, you give me a five. It's all fake. It's not real. And this insularness of the society that we are seeing in Nosedive, it prevents you from growing as a person, and you don't grow. And it's only at the end of this episode, when she is stripped of everything and left in the prison at the end, where she meets the guy I'm just calling Strand. you know, it's very juvenile. They're yelling at each other. And I think it's because she's never grown up. And now that she's stripped away of all these devices where they're pretending to be adults, we realize that she is a child. And now she's finally going to get a chance to grow without this technology and this foolishness.
Growth is an interesting word because, I mean, if you're pretending to be somebody you're not, if you're trying to masquerade as something that you think society will perceive, if you break that, I don't know if it's necessarily growth as much as it is sort of just a come to Jesus moment when you realize who you truly are. I guess it is growth in that way. And I guess we did see that character grow, but I don't know. I have a weird thing about assigning the word growth to that narrative. It seems more change than growth to me.
Well, whether she falls back into, you know, she gets out and her score goes back up 1 point, you know, that she gets her penalty point back. Where does she go? Does she decide to, you know, start up a romance with the guy across the hall and be real, be more like Large Marge? Or does she, you know, once again, say, all right, well, I'm back up to three. I can get to a four next week. You know, like, will she learn from the experience? So I guess you're right. The growth, we don't know if it's there or not. But I'd like to think that at least for the first time in her life, she is at least being true to herself. And hopefully, you know, if you know, I liked her a lot more when she was being real.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more bombastic and a little more cringeworthy, especially that speech at the end. It was tough to not look away during that entire speech because, again, you knew exactly what was coming. You could see ahead of that nose of the plane and you could see the land where you're about to crash into. But yeah, I completely agree. You know, it seemed like Large Marge was definitely a harbinger of good fortune and saying that, you know, once you're free, people may say screw you, but you feel good about yourself. And really, throughout Lacey's portrayal this episode, until that moment, we saw her as someone who really did not respect herself. She was so obsessed with how she was presented to everyone else that she was doing things like, you know, when she gets that smiley face cookie in the very beginning of the episode, when she gets coffee, she takes bites out of the cookie, doesn't even swallow it. The only reason why she took bites out of it was to create a perfect picture that would get her more ratings. I think that's a perfect description of what Lacey's doing. She's essentially starving herself to feed other people's eyes in a way.
Yes. And she, you know, it's all about caring more about what other people think of you rather than caring what you think about yourself. And it's a horribly sad society that they created. And they did a great job of creating it. The first half hour, in terms of world building, I mean, kudos to just creating a complete universe. I mean, I will say when this episode was over and I started watching episode two, it was almost jarring not to see the phones and the ratings going on because it became so normal.
When Cooper was on a Tinder-like app in episode two and he was swiping through, I was having flashbacks to like 10 minutes ago and I was waiting for, you know, their faces to show up in little circles with numbers next to them.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, it was just more of a – you know, Lacey was trying to be the person that she thought she was supposed to be and didn't listen to the people who really cared about her. You didn't listen to her brother. Chester seemed like a nice guy and she didn't listen to him. You know, she's like, oh, I'm not supposed to be nice to him? No, we don't. It's that gang mentality and like, oh, he's not one of the cool kids, so you can't talk to him. And it was like this grown-up society was high school all over again. And like I said, to me, this entire episode was about growing up and are we creating a society of grown-ups who are really stunted children, which would not be a great place to live.
So tell me about your thoughts on this concept of the episode, that they exist in a society where your social media posts influence how you're viewed by other people. Quite literally, you're given a rating between 1 to 5, depending on the number of stars someone gives you. And as a result of your average score, you are given exclusivity to certain perks or you are shunned from other things. What are your thoughts about this idea?
I think it's definitely a legitimate sci-fi kind of spin to say, what if we took this kind of society that exists today, where we certainly, like you said, we have the Uber, you know, you rate the driver rates you, you know, we get likes on Instagram and upvotes and on Facebook and all, you know, I liked it, I didn't like it now. And certainly with the retweets on Twitter, I mean, we have campaigns now where like, oh, look at how many Twitter followers I have. That means I'm special. I mean, that's starting to enter into our politics. So could I see a society like this, you know, developing? Sure. I mean, why does anyone care what the Kardashians have to say? Well, she's got so many Twitter followers. She was a tastemaker. Like, well, what the hell does that mean? But that's where we are. I mean, it really is. You know, you look on these websites to see what famous person was born on your birthday, and it's like, you know, people that I know, like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Mary Lemieux, who have my birthday, they're not even in the top 20. It's some schmo who's a Vine star is listed as number one. Like, Vine star? I mean, I know what Vine is, but really, that's more famous than Neil deGrasse Tyson? No, but
no. Neil deGrasse Tyson represents all of the stars, quite literally.
Yes, we are all made of star stuff. I get that this is the next step, and it would be a horrible society, I think, if we weren't able to dissent for fear that our actual life would be affected by dissent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is something that we talked in our preview podcast again about how Charlie Brooker likes to take our current society and tweak like one little thing, maybe a piece of fantastical technology that changes our lifestyle a whole lot. And this is definitely one, though I completely agree that it seems like we're almost on the path right now. I mean, let's look at how many times you've gone out to lunch or dinner and seen someone, when they get their food, like purposely put it in a good light in order to take an Instagram photo of it. Or, you know, when I graduated from college, I knew of someone who only posted big positive accolades about their life. And you could tell definitely inflated their sense of self-worth to almost satiate their own appetites that they had to realize, like, no, I have a good life. I'm not unhappy at all. Look at all these things I'm posting on social media. There is, to me, an inherent psychology in what you choose to post in that it's going to be displayed to others. And you can either use it as a platform to brag or to rant or to complain or to do all three. It seems like the people in this are definitely doing the former because, as you said, I feel like anything negative that gets brought up on this social media feed in your eye is going to receive a lot of downvotes. So it pretty much becomes, as Ryan kind of outlines to Lacey when he sees the Pelican Cove brochure, it's a little Stepfordsy, where like everyone walks around with big plastered smiles. They make small talk, albeit they force small talk by looking through each other's feeds to figure out what they're doing with their lives. And they think that they're happy, but really there is a lot of emptiness inside that no amount of cookies can fill.
Right, exactly. And it's very telling, you know, when she gets her penalty at the airport. I love that scene, the whole she's trying very hard not to get mad at the airport. Oh, come on, you can round up. No, I cannot round up. Well, have it. Oh, I'm sorry. You're no language. Downvote.
Yeah, that was the first F in Black Mirror. We're going to see many more bombs dropped, but both the twist and the curse variety in the second episode. But that was what, like 20 minutes in? That's pretty conservative by Black Mirror standards.
Yeah, but what I thought was great was, like, after she's, you know, finally, like, stripped of her positive rating, she's dropped down to 3 and dropping even lower, and she's forced to, you know, hitchhike on the side of the road, and there's this couple that drives by, and, you know, they're going to do the right thing because they look at her, and she seems like, you know, a woman in distress. She's dressed fairly nicely, and, you know, she doesn't look like a horrible person by any means. Oh, we need to stop. But because they then look at her score, it's something like, no, she's below a 3. We can't pick her up. You know, and, you know, they're judging her based on essentially a fight she had with an airport clerk. She had a bad day. It was one incident, and suddenly that defines her entire life. And it's really disconcerting that, I mean, yes, in today's society, you can make one mistake, one tweet, and it can destroy you. But I mean, this is taking it to the extreme that, like, even people who have no knowledge of what you said or did over the past 24 hours would be able to see that, oh, you're a pariah, you're someone to be avoided. And it just earns you fewer points and fewer points. And there's no way to get into the inner circle once you've been kicked out of it.
Yeah, I can imagine Daniel Powder's bad day could have just been the backing track for the latter two-thirds of this episode had they afforded the licensing rights. I do also have to point out the reason why I brought up before that I feel like this storyline may have been done before is because I have directly experienced a television show that has covered this kind of subject before. There's an episode of Community's 5th season called App Development and Condiments, which, as you know, Community does a lot of themed episodes. That one was themed around the, you know, the YA dystopian-esque world where everything is crisp and clean and there's an inner circle like you mentioned. And how that episode is built is that there's a new app that is brought to the community college campus called Meow Meow Beans. And essentially, like this episode, you rate people on a scale of 1 to 5. And then depending on your rating, you're put in a certain level of a caste system. Now, that one is obviously more intense and more stylized. This one is supposed to be speak closer to reality. But I want to bring it up because it's, again, something that I've experienced before, and that's why it might have mitigated the episode for me overall, which, again, is to say I still enjoyed watching it, but maybe one of the reasons why I did not enjoy it as much as the second episode is because I was thinking, okay, I've seen a 30-minute comedy show about this already with similar types of results.
Yeah, I think that this episode just isn't as futuristic as perhaps other episodes. And I think we can really see this close to reality. And it's based on a technology that is so ubiquitous. This isn't a fictional technology that he's really creating. He's just taking the current internet and social media and everything and just bumping it up to 11. So it's not that far out of the norm. So, of course, satire would have already taken this and tackled this subject. So I'm not surprised. I didn't watch Community, but I'm not surprised that they handled it. I wouldn't be surprised if we've seen, if we get people saying, oh, I saw an episode of this and an episode of that, because
Simpsons did it.
Exactly. But this is definitely not oh my God, about the story. You know, what Black Mirror does for me usually is, it's still about the characters. So like I said, my issue with this is that I didn't care about Lacey as much as I wanted to, nor did I hate her as much. But I actually, the one thing that at least kept me in suspense, I mean, you said that it was pretty inevitable that we knew that she was going to crash and burn and get down to the 0.0. And I don't know. I actually thought there was a chance that when she got to the wedding that she would be so, you know, disheveled and finally speak her mind. I was thinking that perhaps it would end with like her video becoming viral, like someone had taken a video of her speech and everybody loving her speech, and suddenly she was a 4.9 because, like, you know, everyone saw this and it, like, you know, like a Sweet Brown who, like, ain't nobody got time for that, and suddenly everyone knows who Sweet Brown is, you know, that kind of thing, where suddenly she becomes like a viral sensation and becomes a 4.9 because of this being captured on video. So I didn't necessarily think it was inevitable that she was going to have a sad end here. I wasn't surprised when she did, but I didn't think it was inevitable.
Leave Lacey alone.
Exactly. You never know.
There is one second when I was sort of in line with you. I was thinking back to the end of Merits, where Bing holds the piece of glass up to his throat and decides to have his own honest moment and speak out while he has the stage against this entire concept of a show. And as a result, he's rewarded for it. I thought that there might have been a chance Black Mirror would pull that again and have Lacey, you know, she was kind of undergoing a transition period in that speech where she was alternating between her two forms of the smiley, albeit kind of automaton Lacey talking about her time with Nay Nay at art camp, and then the brutally honest Lacey. I would think that she'd go brutally honest Lacey, people would love it, and as a result, she'd get the luxury apartment, but at what cost? But it did not go in that direction, which is good, because I wouldn't want two Black Mirror episodes to end the same way.
Right. Oh, absolutely. But like I said, I think that in that case, the comparison between the two episodes, I mean, Bing kind of gets what he wants, and he gets there, and he really isn't happy because he's stuck repeating the same thing over and over again and playing this character now. Whereas in this episode, I think Lacey doesn't get what she wants, but I think it is a freeing experience. I think it is a happy ending. I think she's going to be that Large Marge character going forward, and she's going to embrace this new side of herself and become this new person and be happy as a result. So in a weird way, I think they're mirror images of each other, where Bing gets what he wants and isn't happy, and Lacey doesn't get what she wants and will be.
I will stray away from any Black Mirror joke with that comparison. I think Susan makes a great comparison when talking in the middle of the episode to Lacey about how when she became honest, it was like taking off a pair of tight shoes. And I love comparing that to the end when Lacey is sent to that form of weird prison where you can apparently, even though you're in pods, you can still talk easily across to other people. But one of the first things she does is, you know, take off her clothes. I thought it was weird to begin with that the uniform, she wasn't put in a prison uniform. Instead, she was sort of stuck with the dress that she was wearing when she kind of ruined her life, but she decides to strip that off in a way. And now she's a much more free, honest, liberal woman who has now exposed herself quite literally in terms of skin to the rest of the world. I'm also intrigued to know from you, did you feel like this episode of Black Mirror had a higher production value than any of the other episodes we've seen before?
I don't know if it had a higher production value. There was a lot of visual stuff. I think it was kind of on the par with 50 Million Merits. I think it kind of, because that was another one that created this whole universe around the storyline, although it certainly there weren't as many sets for that. So, you know, maybe a little of that Netflix money helped give us a little bit more of a world here. But, you know, I didn't see much difference between this episode and the next episode, which we'll get to in terms of production value. So I just think they just have a lot more money for season three.
I think the only reason I would think that is just because of the innumerable number of shooting locations, because I think that all other Black Mirror episodes, while yes, production values have been high, they've kind of limited themselves to only a select handful of locations or shooting within London for things like the National Anthem and the Waldo episode. Here, I mean, we follow her on the incredible journey. She's not homeward bound. She's quite the opposite. But, I mean, we follow her through so many landscapes that it feels to me like they shot a lot more than you typically would for an episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah, and I think that just might be the freedom of Netflix, giving them the budget. Because, you know, as someone who watches Sense8 on Netflix, I mean, that's a show that takes place in locations around the globe. And so certainly they don't seem to have a problem with giving you the money to film on location wherever you want if the story's there. And so one thing that Black Mirror proved in the first two seasons, the story's there.
Any other thoughts about Nosedive before we take our own playtest, dial into the VR system?
The horrible nature of these wonderful people with the 4.8s, I thought was really good to see that even though they really were the bad guys, they also kind of seemed really miserable and a slave to like their own popularity. So I like the fact that there was conflict there. I think I probably would have liked to see the story a little bit more from Nene's side of the equation, which is why I really enjoyed when she finally tells her not to go and reveals why she invited her in the first place, which to me was a really cool admission that, you know, grass is not always greener on the other side. You, just because she happens to be a 4.8, she lives in deathly fear of dropping below 4 or 5 and is afraid to do anything that isn't perfect.
Yeah, I loved the Naomi character. I called her like a hysterically basic caricature because she's a great representation of sort of what the social media amalgam spits out in terms of here's someone that looks perfect. She's doing backbends on the beach. She's running around with her trophy husband who may or may not be swiping other guys' feeds. Just saying. It seems like she's living a perfect life. And even when she calls, she's always like doing, you know, she's in a bikini the first time. The second time she's doing these yoga poses in the backyard, she's showing off her house. It's just great to see her as sort of a representation of what she's doing. When you can tell from like the wedding reception itself that she is not very happy. It seems like the happiness is only skin deep. You know, when her husband like embraces his best man in that bro chest bump, you could tell from the look on her face, she's like, I really don't want to do this, but I guess I have to if I need to keep up my rating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this wedding is I've got all these high fours here. I mean, it's certainly going to keep me locked into my 4.9 that I'm shooting for. And then, you know, I can do whatever I want for the next year. You know?
Yeah, and I loved that everyone between Lacey and the aforementioned Naomi moment, they treat social interactions like a science. You know, when Lacey goes to visit her consultant at that firm and he brings up a literal line graph of her day saying like, well, you peaked around 8:41 a.m. and then you took a dip right here at work. It's just, it's crazy on paper to think about living in a world where you chart out every single interaction you have in your day and how it may help forecast trends for a productive or unproductive future. But again, I feel like we're only a step away from really quantifying these things, considering how more reliant people are on social media over the past few years and how much they're basing social interactions and their judgments of people off of what they post through these few sources on your screens. It's amazing to think about that might be a world we legitimately get into soon.
Yeah, the fact that we do live in a world where, and I'd be guilty of it too, where, you know, you'll send a tweet out and you'll like, you know, oh, did anyone like my tweet? Oh, I got some retweets. You know, you definitely want that kind of pat on the back and, you know, hey, you know, you're doing a good job and it makes you feel good, and you know, but it isn't everything. and it would be scary if we lived in a world where it was everything. And that's like, even though I didn't love this episode and wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait to see this episode again and again and again, it still was interesting to explore a world where that was the case. And I think it definitely captured something that was believable. Yeah. And that's what's disturbing about the show. Even in the episodes I don't necessarily love, it's always something where I could say, yeah, I guess I could see that. And I would not want that to happen.
Yeah, like you said, I thought it was fun world building, albeit something that a concept that I'd already seen before personally. I thought the performances were strong, and I thought the theming was nice. I think it just might have had a little bit of trouble in terms of plotting everything out to the point of where it did run a little long, especially in the middle of Lacey's journey. But let's move into playtest. AJ, give me an elevator pitch on playtest. How would you describe these 53 minutes to someone?
Well, first of all, awesome. Let's just start there. I love this episode. I think this is an episode, I mean, if you're just going to say this is like you take this first-person shooter type of video game technology that we've got going on here, and you take it to the next level where the game is inside of you rather than putting you inside the game. And what would happen if you took a game that was so real you couldn't tell the difference between reality and the game itself, and the game was intelligent enough to not only would you learn how to beat the game, but the game would learn how to beat you, and how terrifying that would be.
Yeah, it's sort of like if they took Scarecrow's nerve toxin and put it into a video game that turned into a virtual reality. It's this idea that you are put inside a quote-unquote horror survival game where your worst fears are brought up against you. And sort of like Ultron, it is adaptable. If you crush that spider, you better believe it's coming back 100 times bigger and 100 times scarier, to the point of where, since it's augmented reality and not necessarily virtual reality, I mean, I think Katie describes it as layers on top of reality. And it really makes you question the fantastic question we get in some of these Black Mirror episodes and some of the finest sci-fi films: what is real and what is fake? And we're very much along with Cooper for the ride in terms of following his path through several false reveals to an unfortunate ending.
Yeah, he's playing a very deadly game of Pokemon Stop instead of Pokemon Go. But I mean, we're getting this technology now where you can kind of put these images on top of actual reality, and it doesn't seem that this is as far off as you might have thought even just a few years ago. And that's why I love Black Mirror's use of technology to create something that doesn't seem as far-fetched when you watch an episode and see the whole world built in front of you as you might think if you just heard that elevator pitch.
Now, AJ, you know I am not a fan of horror films.
Oh, I know.
There was definitely a point 15, 20 minutes in when I'm thinking, you know, I am staring off the entire time because I know the jump scares are there. There were a couple, but I caught them. But I was so thrilled with the direction this episode took. I mean, I went through my own roller coaster. It was as if I was riding a plane with Cooper and I put my arms up in the air because I felt elation, fright, confusion. All these second string dwarves were there.
Yeah, I just want to say, all four of the major actors in this episode were amazing. I believed every one of them. I thought the fact that we started with this kind of budding meet-cute romance between Cooper and Sonya, I adored them together. I adored her. I thought he was charming and fun. I mean, to that quickly create two characters and a relationship between them that I wanted to see succeed, you know, whereas, you know, in Nosedive, I didn't really care too much what happened to Lacey. I was rooting for Cooper and Sonya like from 10 minutes in. I didn't know where it was going at that point, but I was like, I'm all in with these two. And so it really made what happened later when he finally enters the world of the game so much more intense. And just really, really, the stakes were there and they were created so quickly.
And any guess I had as to where this episode was going next, I was completely wrong about, starting with when Cooper goes into the game studio initially and he undergoes the first sort of test and he decides to stupidly get up while Kitty's out of the room and take pictures with his phone of the equipment to send to Sonya because she told him he could get a lot of money for it. And you know, he stupidly doesn't think that there'd be a camera looking at him the entire time. There's a look that Katie gives him that for a second I thought was going to be her saying, okay, now let's screw with this guy because he decides to be the Slugworth and, you know, reveal all our secrets. Now we're going to mess with him and make sure he regrets coming here. And of course, at the end, that turns out to not be true, that they were much more innocent than I initially thought, and that Cooper was the one to kind of intermittently cause his own demise.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's great about this, is you think that the other shoe's going to drop this entire episode and that there's something nefarious going on. And, you know, I was envisioning that, you know, they were going to have him end up trapped in the game and become one of the characters in the game, and that's why their games are so real, or something like that.
Tron meets Black Mirror, finally.
Yeah, you know, that was certainly a kind of thing, or you know, certainly that Shoseto is like, he probably really speaks perfect English, and the Japanese accent and talking Japanese is just an act. You know, there's got to be something wrong with these developers. But really, from the get-go, we see that Cooper's this kind of guy who, you know, he is a good guy, but he kind of fled his life and took all these chances. He ran with the Bulls and he went around the world, and he's, you know, he's just trying to create all these memories for himself, and he's reckless. And it's something that could very easily have caused his death in a moment. And that's kind of what happens to him in this. It's just a moment's 0.4 seconds that causes him to die, and it's something that he did recklessly without thinking about it. And I think that it's amazing that's what causes him to be the ultimate victim. It's just a stupid one decision, and yet he was able to live his life and have these adventures and have this last hurrah of memories in his head that he did experience. So in a way, he lived more in those 0.4 seconds than most people live in a lifetime.
Yeah, give me more of your thoughts about Cooper, played by Wyatt Russell, who I think the biggest credit to his name before this might have been playing one of the named jocks in 22 Jump Street. What do you think about his performance and the sort of backstory we get right before he goes to the game studio?
I thought he was fantastic. I really believed him as this guy who was just trying to escape the death of his father and didn't really want to deal with his mom, who was grieving in her own way, and he wanted to grieve in a different way. And he was so afraid of ending up, and he confesses to Sonya in what I thought was a really raw, honest scene where he's like, he just admits to this woman he just hooked up with and you know, didn't even know, but the emotions are so raw in there. He's just willing to say, like, yeah, I don't want to end up like him and not have these memories, you know, and be a shell of myself. And so I'm creating as many memories as I can right now. And then I'll go back home and I'll deal with it. And that's when I'll grieve. And I think it's just, it leads him down a path where he's going to make some stupid choices, unfortunately. But I totally bought him as a character. He was so sympathetic, and it was endearing. I mean, like I said, I would have watched an entire episode without any of the horror stuff, just the relationship of Cooper and Sonya. I thought both of them were fantastic.
Yeah, so a couple things about Cooper. First, I thought it looked like he had aged at least 5 years when he grew the beard over his travels. He looked so, so young when he left home initially, and maybe that's also symbolic that he grew a beard and he also kind of grew up in his travels, that it felt like a long time. But I'll admit, the character definitely endeared himself onto me. The beginning when he was in the house, I mean, I thought he just would not shut the hell up. He's even when he gets to the game studio, he's making jokes about Hadouken and Harry Potter. And it's clear Katie even lampshades it later on of like, well, some people like spouting off at the mouth in order to sort of mask the fear. It's why people leave the television on at night when they get scared. And I could definitely see what they were going for. And I think once we actually got to the meat of where we go into this labyrinth, things get a lot more interesting. But when it was just Cooper talking to himself for about 15 minutes, it was not my favorite part of the episode, personally.
I still enjoyed it because he was still talking with Katie. We could tell he was being observed the whole time. And I love the different points of view of watching the surveillance cameras and all that stuff. There wasn't a lot that I hadn't seen before in terms of the beginning of this horror thing. You know, the one spider. All right, I've seen Arachnophobia. It's creepy, but you know, okay. You know, the
was
picture.
It Jeepers Creepers?
Jeepers Creepers. Yeah. Kingdom of the Spiders with William Shatner. Sure. But you know, and
Lavalantula featuring Steve Guttenberg. Not probably scary for a different reason.
Steve Guttenberg? Of the Gutenberg Bible? Oh, no, different Gutenberg. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, in the painting where, you know, oh, there's a light on in the painting. I've seen that in many horror films over the years, so nothing major there. But what was different was the fact that he was talking about it, and it was being deconstructed. And from that point on, everything that happened to him, you know, it was drawn from things he had already told us in the first half of the show. So we'd heard about the bully story. So when the bully comes up, it wasn't a surprise to us. And, you know, certainly I knew it was going down the path where at some point his father's death and the losing of his memory had to have factored in, because that just seemed the natural course of events. But I didn't know they would get there in the way that they did. And certainly, you know, when he lost communication with Katie, that was where the episode really started to kick into overdrive, mm-hmm. you know, with Sonya showing up. And is it real? Is it not real? And how can you tell when there's layers upon layers who's real and who's not? It was just great.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when Sonya enters the house, I think things definitely get to use a video game analogy, another level. I mean, there's so many questions brought in there, you know, considering that he was able to touch her. Is she real, or is this, as they talked about before, the video game technology adapting itself? You know, Cooper was able to put his hand through the spider and through Steve before, or through Josh Peters before, and to realize that they're not real. Is it just adapting to make him freak out a little more, or is that really her? I thought for a second that when he pulls back Sonya's face to reveal that she's actually Red Skull from Captain America, but when he stabs her with the knife, I thought for a second that she had actually come and he had killed her, and now things are going to escalate to another level because he actually has blood on his hands. But that turns out not to be the case. AJ, talk to me about your thoughts throughout these last, like, 20 minutes of the episode. Did you follow it the entire time, or were there certain points when you're like, no, there's going to be another reveal, that they're in another simulation, or that this isn't real?
Well, I think this is what you get when you have a horror movie or anything with a dream sequence. You know, you kind of expect the wake up, oh no, he's still sleeping, wake up, oh no, he's still sleeping, wake up, and maybe it'll leave you hanging at the end. You know, that's the cliched ending where, you know, it's like, oh, thank goodness I'm finally out of the dream, or am I? You know, your Total Recall kind of ending. I was afraid it was going to go down that route, but I also never really felt at ease with where it was going. I thought they did a really nice job that within that kind of cliche feel, there was still a freshness to it. And when everybody disappears and the knife disappears and everything, and they're like, oh, he's still in the game, I'm like, okay, we might be in for a couple of those. But Katie tells him to go upstairs and go in that door. And his fear at what he might see behind that door, that was unexpected. And that mm-hmm. was really cool. And not knowing what he was going to see when he opened that door, you know, there was very real tension there. And I love when a show can make me feel the tension of the characters. And he didn't know what was going to be behind that door. And I didn't know. I didn't want him to open that door. I was terrified for him. And when he opens the door and there's nothing in there, you're just like, oh, okay. Well, maybe, you know, another shoe has to drop. But at that point, I have no idea what it's going to be. And when the door disappears and Katie is like, yes, well, we got you to come up here. I'm like, ah, there's the shoe. But it's not the shoe. And I love that it just constantly toyed with you, going, nope, nope, you haven't figured it out. Nope, you haven't figured it out. And we can do this all day for as long as we want, because we're in charge. We're the creators of the show. And we are toying with you just as this game is toying with Cooper. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think people can make the joke about how this might mirror something like Inception, especially since a 53-minute episode basically takes place in what is supposed to be 0.04 seconds in Cooper's mind, or even compare it to there's a Rick and Morty episode where this concept essentially comes out throughout the episode of, like, you think you're in a simulation, but you're actually in a simulation of a simulation. But I followed this with every twist and turn that it took. Like you said, when Cooper went in there and Katie comes forward and says, you know, this is what we have to do with you. You know, you're starting to lose all your memories. You're becoming the thing that you feared worst. You're turning into your father. I was gutted. If they had ended the episode right there, it would have been amazing. Not to say this episode didn't end on a great note, but that would have been so dark and so morose, but so thematic. I would have salivated at the idea of it, much like Cooper himself was salivating at losing his memories. But then it turns out to all be, for the moment, a simulation of when he first went in. And it turns out that, oh, they're much more wholesome than they think. They said, oh, no, we were too intense. Let's send you home. And you think everything's fine. Did you feel things were a little off as soon as he opened the door and Mom was there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you think maybe there'll be a nice denouement, but I thought perhaps he would go upstairs and, like, his mom would be dead or his mom would be dying. Like, I thought there was something that maybe he was telling us the story wrong from the get-go. I thought that was where we were headed, that he was going to go home and there was going to be something going on there, like maybe he had killed his father, like something weird that, like, you know, we had trusted him because it was his story, but we had been fooled. So I knew something was going to happen, but I didn't expect to have her not know who he was. And just be calling him randomly because she too was at this point, or so we think, that she too is suffering from some sort of loss of memory.
Yeah, so do we think that's the case? Because I was debating this, of whether that really was she was suffering from her own form of Alzheimer's as well, and maybe that's one reason why he left home is because he felt like there would be too much responsibility there and obviously too much dread when she eventually passed away. Or do you think it was sort of like a Christmas Carol where he's the ghost and she was just sitting alone in her room and decided to call him?
Yeah, I think it was just him still being in this nightmare state. And if his number one fear was his number one fear was spiders, that, you know, and then his number two fear was, you know, the bullies of his past coming at him. But we all know that his ultimate fear was not becoming his dad and losing his memories. Well, he survived that. And so he defeated that monster. So now the game kicks it up a notch and says, okay, well, how about your mom suffers the same fate as your dad? That would probably get you. Let's see if that works. I think the game was still messing with him. And
yeah.
So I was totally on board with that. And that broke him. I think that's where he loses.
Either that or it's interesting to determine whether or not the game was telling him this is your mother becoming your father, or it's flipping what they just tried to do with him on its head and saying, oh, we won't have you forget everything. We'll have everyone around you forget that you exist instead. Sort of like the ending to White Christmas in a way, where now essentially if he goes to see Sonya, Sonya won't remember him. If he goes to see his mother won't remember him. That would, again, if they stop the episode there, I thought that would be incredible. But then they go even one step further when it turns out that the thing to short him out is the thing that he's been avoiding the entire time, a call from Mom.
Yeah, exactly. If he had just answered the phone and talked to his mother in the first place, if he had just listened to Sonya, who clearly seemed to care about him, and told him he was a good person, call your mom. I mean, in a way, it's the darkest of dark comedies that, like, if you just called your mom, everything would have been okay.
I mean, yeah, this is going to be like the ultimate. I have no idea if, like, older women would love to watch this show, but if they happen to watch this episode, they could, like, definitely sit their sons down and show it to them and be like, see, this is why you should always call me or else you're going to end up dead.
Exactly. It's a big punchline to this horror thing, but yet it's still also horrible. I mean, I just thought it was great that, he didn't pass that first test with the cute little whack-a-mole. He never took that test. Like, you know, basically she came in the room and all right, let's do the upload, And the phone rang because he had turned it on after she had turned it off. That it was his own fault for being a jerk and trying to steal things. So, you know, it was all the bad things that he did coming to bite him in the ass. And I think that's hilarious.
And I think it's fantastic to tie it back to the very beginning of the episode when he's flying down to start his backpacking journey. And he's asked very kindly to turn off his electronic device so it doesn't interfere with the plane's electrical signals. I think jury's still out as to whether that's a legitimate thing. But he very much acquiesces and does. So I guess that's a reason why you should always turn off your electronics when operating major machinery, people.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to end up in a Black Mirror episode, that's for darn sure. But I just thought it was clever. It was incredibly paced. The sense of dread and horror was real. And there's just some really dark humor at the end there. And again, I thought all four actors like were so spot on and so brilliant that I bought into every single decision, every little nuance. I would watch like 2-3 more hours of these characters doing something. I think it was just great from beginning to end, and I was shaken by this. I just thought it was just so well done, and like I told you, I said I watched this episode and I needed a hug.
Yeah, hopefully not any hugs from any eight-legged creatures or creepily pasty bullies from your past anytime
soon.
Yeah,
but just even that, like the very realistic sci-fi psycho babble that you kind of get in these horror movies and everything when, you know, you're making up this technology and everything, and you know her to say, oh, no wonder you were thinking about spiders. It wasn't because you were afraid, but because the tendrils of the device were actually – like I get that visual imagery, and it makes sense in terms of like a television explanation for what's going on. So I thought even that was a great little play on the cliches of horror, and yet it still spun it again into a different direction.
And what a fun coda at the end as well, where obviously Katie and Saito don't understand what the whole called mom thing was. They're like, oh, that's odd that he yelled out mom. You know, for testing purposes, we might as well write down if that happened, because maybe that's some sort of neurosis that our product caused. And so you see, rather ironically, in the message for the logging of the test case / sort of his death certificate, called mom, which he never did, and that led to his death. And I think that's like right in like the Twilight Zone Black Mirror wheelhouse of ironic endings.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it just, like I said, it was just so well done. So perfect button to the mushroom button that was on his neck. I just thought everything in this episode was great. And this is why I love Black Mirror. It's
absolutely
episodes like this. Like I said, it's right up there with 50 Billion Bears and White Bear for me. Like I said, I'll have to let it digest and see. You know, we got 4 more episodes to get through. I was probably at like, okay, I'm excited Black Mirror is back, but I'm not like over the moon when I watch Nosedive. But after this one, I just want to just watch 4 more. Like, I'm just so excited right now. My adrenaline is like pumping really, really hard, as if I had just seen a spider.
And you're not even scared.
Yeah.
Black Mirror, there are definitely a few episodes that I would want to sit people down and put it on for them, if only just to watch their reactions. And I feel like Playtest has got to be up there now. So I feel like this is going to be pretty easy to do right now. But what I want to do as we're going through this season is track our own personal rankings of these 6 episodes, separate from the separate episodes we talked about seriously, but do our own sort of power rankings. But I think it's pretty definitive for both of us, Playtest 1, Nosedive 2, correct?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question that of the two, the one I would immediately want to watch again is Playtest. And certainly it's no it's not saying Nosedive is awful by any means. It's just I like this one better.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it in our preview podcast that even a bad episode of Black Mirror is still better than a lot of stuff that's on TV these days, and especially better than a lot of other stuff in this genre that's attempted these days. So I have to give, again, Charlie Brooker major kudos for both these episodes. I feel like he came in strong here, just a little stronger on the second attempt than the first, but it has made me, as you said, so excited that we have 4 more episodes at our fingertips to binge before the hackers get to us.
Yeah, and, you know, absolutely. And, you know, Nosedive, I mean, I would not be stunned. I don't think anyone would be stunned if, just on the basis of that speech she gave at the wedding alone, that we see an Emmy nomination for Bryce Dallas Howard. I mean, would anyone be stunned by that? I don't think so. I mean, that's the kind of individual performance tour de force if this run gets a lot of buzz, is certainly going to be nominated for something somewhere, Golden Globe or something.
Yeah, because this is, I know Black Mirror won an international Emmy, I think, for its first season, but this is the first time it's going to be available in American networks, so I think it will be eligible for Emmys. I mean, it is coming out at a time where, you know, Emmy nominations are going to open 9 months from now, so maybe it might be forgotten by then, but I'll be intrigued to see how much it catches on and how much people in my social circles are talking about it and probably posting about it in order to get a better ranking.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope for, because I'm a fan of the show and I want it to do well and I want more and more and more and more and more. I would hope that anyone who really enjoyed Stranger Things might, you know, be asking, oh, what should I watch next? And certainly I would say Black Mirror. Give it a chance. I mean, there's a lot. Netflix has a lot of really good shows. I love Sense8, and I've been watching Bloodline. And, you know, the acting on all of these shows is outstanding. And if this is going to be known as the place you go to watch some experimental television, but the acting is going to be brilliant, I just think it's the place to go for drama right now.
I mean, I could do an entirely different podcast about how much I love Netflix comedy as well. It really does feel like the Wild West in terms of content, and I think that Amazon and Hulu have followed suit but not have been as successful as Netflix is, but I feel like hopefully Black Mirror will be one of its successes, if not commercially, at least critically speaking. And I'd say between the two of us, we are very much thumbs up, given the like, to Black Mirror Season 3 so far.
So far, so good. Let's see how the next four land with us. But I'm very excited, given how the momentum seems to be building. And look, if it only goes up from here, I don't know if I'm going to be able to talk after watching the next two.
Oh no, you're going to be rendered speechless like Cooper was at the end. Are your synapses all going to fire up at once after a particular moment in Black Mirror Season 3?
It's possible. If you hear any strange zipper sounds, then, you know, just come check on me, please.
All right. Well, you can check up on AJ Mass through his Twitter at AJ Mass. I'm, of course, at a Mike Bloom type. When you're listening to this podcast, let us know your thoughts about the first two episodes. Or if you'd like to submit feedback as you have been binging these episodes, you're able to reach out to us at feedback@postshowrecaps.com. And if we get enough feedback, maybe we'll do something at the end of our exploration of this season, talking about the season overall and answering some of your questions and your thoughts. I'd be really intrigued to hear from you all out there what you think about these first two episodes. But we are not nearly done yet. We're only a third of the way through the season. We have four more episodes to go. You're going to hear from AJ and I, hopefully in the next 24 hours, to talk about episodes 3 and 4 of Black Mirror Season 3. It should be super exciting, especially on the note that they left episode 2 on. To finish things off, can we think of a hashtag to give people who made it to the end of this podcast?
Hashtag called mom.
Oh, I love that. Hopefully that's not a sign of your personal fates. Just let us know that you called your mom, because you got to do that once in a while. They're your mom, for goodness sakes. They might be sitting at home on a bed, staring off into a corner, waiting to call their son over and over again and unintentionally cause his death. You never know. So call your mom. I think that's the lesson of these two episodes. So we will be back very, very soon to talk about Black Mirror Season 3, Episodes 3 and 4. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
You can blame me. Try to shame me. And still I'll care for you. You can run around.